way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face.
And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3837 of the Survival Podcast. On a short week this week, because I wasn't here Monday. I was on my way back from Tennessee with the Living Free in Tennessee conference up there. So we are already into an interview for the week. And I have Allie Nickling Riddle about to come on in a bit. We won't be telling riddles. We'll be decrypting the riddle of why does everything explode on your homestead and doesn't work out the way that you want? Why do you put systems in and you think they're systems and they really weren't systems? There were tactics and techniques that are designed to fail from the beginning. Why do we all have this beautiful vision of this homestead that looks just like the heart hand people make on Instagram, and then reality sets in and a lot of things don't work, and we start pulling our hair out of our head, whatever hair we got left, and say, why isn't this working for me? This actually dovetails nicely into the show 2 weeks ago I did with Ryan Steva, the homestead consultant. We're basically covering the same concept from a different person's viewpoint, and that's what I try to do is bring you guys a diversity of opinion and knowledge so that you can make the best decisions for yourself. So I'll have Allie on in just a moment to talk about all of that and more. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. And sponsor of the day number one today is Biltong USA. That is Anton Van Vuren's company. Anton has been a good friend of this show so long ago that it actually started right about the time everybody was locking down for COVID. So believe it or not, that's like 5 years ago now, a little bit more actually. And actually, COVID is what kind of blew up his business. He had just opened a small little kind of little sit-down, eat-in restaurant cafe with a little unique import grocery store attached to it. And then the COVID's hit. And then, you know, he couldn't really do his thing, and he had all this money tied up in it, and he realized that Biltong was a great product. Most people, if they had heard of it at all, had never actually tried the real thing. He started making it, realizing it was a high-dollar product that he could ship, and it really blew up his business. And then he reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to try some of my Biltong? You guys know me and meat, and you guys know me and Biltong. What do you think I said? Well, of course I do. He said it. It was fantastic. We started working together. And you can get Biltong from Anton along with some of the other products like the Drewers, the Calabanasi sausage, and a bunch of different stuff imported from all over the world at BiltongUSA.com. And MSB members, you absolutely do get a discount on all the products there. Next up today, if CanineAcademy.us, that's Joel Ryle's educational arm, goes along with Fortress Canine, which is where he trains some of the most advanced protection dogs available anywhere in the world. But if you want to be able to train your dog at home with the level of competence that someone like Joel does, he's got you sorted out here. You have a whole array of courses you can choose from. I recommend if you've never tried it before, at least go buy Fortress or canineacademy.us today and sign up there for the problem solving library. These are the basic things you need to know about becoming a better dog trainer. It will let you know if Joel's system is right for you. If you feel comfortable with it, you can look at things like the basics course. Honestly, I think everybody should just spend the $62 and take that to tell you the truth. I have found that most people get poor results in dealing with their dogs because they're using poor technique in training their dogs. It really is that simple. Joel can turn that all around for you. He's one of the best I've ever seen for sure. And with that, I want to bring our special guest on, Allie Riddle. How you doing today, Allie?
Hi, Jack. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you with us today. We've got some stuff we want to cover, but I always like to start out with what I call like the elevator pitch history lesson, right? What you could tell people in a minute or two on an elevator about how you ended up where you are.
Right.
I find most people that I interview that are doing the homesteading thing, the permaculture thing, regen ag thing, mostly anything I interview people for, they didn't start out that way. And something right. in their life created a fork in the road, and they followed some kind of wonky road and ended up here. So, you know, take us back to like you're either in high school or college or something, trying to figure out what to do with your life, and how do you end up being this person that talks about and teaches homesteading?
Listen, it was a long road. Everybody's road is kind of long and curvy. I'm no exception. So I grew up rurally as a young person and a teenager, and I really loved that lifestyle. But as I, you know, got older after college, where I went through for journalism and writing, you know, I moved out of or moved into the city, like most people. I switched from the writing very quickly over into business administration, where I stayed for about 20 years before I moved back into the writing world again and built up a freelance business for myself. We had some big life changes, as happens in life. And when you need to rebuild your life from a starting point that's really fresh, you get to do it however you want. And for me, I was interested in getting back to a simplistic lifestyle. And when the pandemic hit, of course, in 2020, that just reaffirmed my decision that this was a path that I kind of needed to follow to be a little bit more self-reliant and continue with my writing.
Okay. Let's kind of get into the main topic here.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think so many people romanticize homesteading, and how is it different from the reality most people, you know, see on social media? I talked about the heart hands thing, and I don't think that's really prevalent in our space, but it's kind of like a metaphor for the whole thing. Like, and it's not just homesteading. It's the tiny house thing, right? Everybody in a tiny house is always reading a book, and their place is always perfect. Every homestead, it's idyllic. The sun is setting, and chickens are on their way in, and the cow is gazing at its navel and contemplating its place in the universe. And then there's reality of a homestead.
Not always pretty. It's not always pretty. I think that where people get that idea, unfortunately, is from social media. A lot of people haven't even heard of homesteading before, don't really understand the concept until maybe it comes across their feed. And if they're intrigued by it, that's great. If they're looking for, you know, a little bit different lifestyle or some way to be a little bit more self-reliant, you might get hooked into a lot of these channels, which are great informational channels. But a lot of them are showcasing their tips and, skills building based on homesteads that are 5 to 10 years old. You know, you're seeing a already developed and in a lot of cases running smoothly homestead. That is not the reality in the first 1 to 2 to actually 5 years, depending on, you know, your speed of development. And so I think people see the idyllicism of it. You know, everyone wants to be in their little house on the prairie dress and throwing feed out to the chickens, but they don't see the 5 a.m., you know, getting up to go feed those chickens and slogging through mud and doing it in the winter where you're sliding around on ice and all of those things. And just the time that it takes to even get your homestead to the point where it's ready for chickens. You know, you might not have anything other than just building infrastructure for a couple of years. So I think there's a lot of, while I think people, a lot of creators, a lot of content creators are trying to be very helpful. And they do provide a lot of good information. What we're trying to do is give you the no BS, no filter, reality check. If you want to do this lifestyle, it's great, but this is what you're going to face.
I think we also have, and sometimes it's nefarious and sometimes it's just human nature. Every 80s kid, every Gen X kid knew the drill that when your room was supposed to be clean, anything you didn't get cleaned up, you just shoved it way under the bed and hid it. And then when your mom or dad came and checked, it looked like your room was clean. And if they were busy, all they did was pop their head and go, yeah, he cleaned his room. And I think there's a lot of that on the Instagram, the YouTube, et cetera. Like, I'm going to get this nice tight shot on this part of my homestead that looks all idyllic right now. And there's really a bunch of junk that was there, and I just threw that stuff out of the range of the camera because I didn't want it in the shot.
For sure.
It very few homesteaders, you know, and I'll do it. I'll walk around like, this is totally broke. I didn't get that done yet or whatever. Like, I think we need more of that. I think we do need some of the, look at this perfectly dialed in system working, because if people don't believe they can get there, they won't try. But I think if you set an unreasonable expectation on what it takes to get there, then they'll fall out.
That seems to be why people seem to fail. And in our own experience, it's about 70% of people who jump into this lifestyle too quickly without really doing all of the research and taking all of the different aspects into consideration generally fail by year 2. So it's It's a massive investment. It's a massive life switch. You need to give it the proper time and research and consideration that you would for any other type of, you know, lifestyle swing. For if you really want to build a solid foundation and be successful. And unfortunately, I think social media is not social reality, you know, and people get discouraged when they see their homestead that they're just starting on and it's all mud and it's piles of crap everywhere. And it's, you know, you're living in a trailer and you're pooping in a bucket and you haven't had a shower in a week and all of those other things. Nobody sees that part. So it can be shocking when you get to that, you know, space if you've never done the research and don't kind of anticipate that it's going to get way harder before it gets easier for any of your homesteading systems. Truly.
Let's talk about some more reasons that people tend to fail and quit. To me, another one is, on top of everything you just said, instead of not just doing the research, getting the system all tight, they try to do 10 things at once or 3 things at once or 4 things at once.
And
like, a person's never gardened and a person's never kept animals and they start a garden right away and they get 2 different species of animals with 2 different husbandry requirements. And they have those 3 things going at the same time. And not only have they tried to do too much too fast without experience, they have not built the infrastructure. I think there's probably every homesteader can relate to, like, we weren't really ready for chickens, but we went to the feed store and they were so cute. We brought them home and we thought we had time, and at 4 weeks they're flying out of a brooder and roosting on your lamp in your living room and crapping on the dog, and you still don't have a coop. And I think that going too fast with anything is bad, but when it's multiple things, is really bad.
Right. And, you know, to come back to what we were saying about how people get interested in this, they see the completed project. And, you know, most generations that are younger than Gen X, you know, is a little bit programmed to want everything right now. I want it the first year. I want it done. I want it to look like how I imagine it in my head. And, you know, those aspirations are great, but you need to put it on a dream board, not necessarily jump right in. You know, what I tell people in my workshops about livestock of any kind is that until you become an expert, let's just say it's chickens, until you become an expert on chickens and you have the infrastructure to support them, you have no business getting an animal that you are responsible for. Not only is it unfair to you, it's unfair to the animal if you don't really understand the care requirements and the amount of work that you're going to have to put into it. So we tell people, focus on your infrastructure. You know, whatever you think is going to take you a certain amount of time to get that built, triple it, triple that time. If you think you're going to be ready in a year, maybe you'll be ready by year 3. And that's just a reality, you know? So for example, my husband and I, we did 3 years of research. We are on year 4 of our own homestead. We are completely 100% off grid, but we also both have other jobs. So all of our projects have to be kind of scheduled. It's not just a constant, you know, development. We have to do it in stages as well. We had a two-year plan. Then it quickly moved to a 3-year plan and then a 5-year plan. And now it's around a 7-year plan. You have to be flexible for that. If you are, you know, if you're so excited, you know, about getting on your homestead, that's great. The motivation is a great thing, but it's not going to take you through the harder things if you're not prepared. And getting everything all at once is dividing your attention away from systems that are really important to be developed properly. So, you know, while there's an urge to get the cute little chickens and bring in your bunnies or get the little jumping goats and put them in one piece pajamas or whatever it is that you want to do, that will come once you are properly set up. If you rush things too quickly, you are much more likely for the whole system to fall apart.
This is why I think a lot of people that have no experience that are on a half an acre actually do really well. And a lot of people that manage to get themselves onto 20 or 40 acres end up pulling their hair out. Because the person that put on a small piece of land, and I'm not saying you have to, I have like a mid-size, I have a 3-acre piece of land. It'll wear your butt out too, right? But the person that has to fit everything onto an acre or less, generally, because of that alone, number one, they can see everything. So you can't leave a bunch of crap out by the fence and then just leave it there for 3 weeks because you forgot about it and come back and the grass has grown up over it.
Right.
But they, you have to be more conscious. Like, if I'm going to put this thing here and it's going to take up, you know, even 5% of my total space, that's significant. If I got 20 right. acres and I put a coop on it the size of my house, it doesn't even seem to matter. So yeah. I think that a lot of times, and I'm not, again, I'm not saying don't go get a big piece of land. I'm saying that even if you do, set up the, your tight initial system for what we call in permaculture, kind of that zone one, and then right. maybe not even full zone two, like a 1.5-ish thing, and yeah. tighten that all up first. So because you will be more conscious of your decisions if you can't just use all the space. And I think we also kind of like some people buy a house bigger than they wanted, and they right. ain't going to use three of the rooms, so they still feel like they got to go to a furniture store and buy furniture for all the rooms.
Right.
You don't have to right. do it right away. And so whether yeah, you start on something smaller or force yourself to design on a smaller piece until you right. get things dialed in.
Right. You know, in our case, we bought 40 acres, but that's just happens to be, you know, how big the lot was. It had it checked every other single box for us. But I'll tell you, we don't need 40 acres. We use about 3.5 acres of that 40 acres. And I think one of the big mistakes that people get into is they have the misconception that you have to be off the grid on 100 acres to make this type of a lifestyle work. And the truth about it is that if you really want to test yourself to see if you are ready to go all in to the homesteading lifestyle, you can start right now. You can start wherever you're at. You can start if you're in an apartment in Mississauga. You can, you know, you can start in your regular neighborhood if you have a backyard. You don't need the space. You need to learn the skills first, you know. You don't need to spend the money. Who needs to spend the money on 100 acres when 5 acres is really plenty of room, you know, depending on how you want to design your homestead. But in general, to accommodate a small family, you really don't need as much space as people think they do. You know?
Start pricing fencing.
Exactly.
And then look at the circumference of 40 acres. And I'm not saying if you have 40, you need to fence the whole thing. I'm just saying that's just a consideration. Or, well, I'll just right. put water in, you know, I'll put water to the back of the property.
Right.
Okay. Have you priced pipe lately? Because
right.
it's about 4x what it was 8 years ago.
Exactly.
Remember when everybody talked about how cheap it was to build stuff out of PVC pipe?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's almost free. And I know I tell that it ain't no more.
No. We're very lucky. We're in Northern Ontario up in Canada. And so 90% of our property is heavily forested. So we use the clearings that are there first before we have to clear anything else out, you know. But each thing, like you were saying, each part of your infrastructure takes really careful consideration, you know, not only for the expense of it, but for the day-to-day convenience of it. For example, how far do you want to put your woodshed from your house? Because if you're in an area where you experience winter, you've got to slog that through the snow to get to your woodshed without wiping out on the ice or dropping your, you know, load or whatever it is. So you want to make sure that it's not too close where it causes a hazard, but close enough so that it's a straight shot from your house, you know, in the winter. Things like, how big is your woodshed going to be? Do you know how much wood you're going to need to last you a season? You know, these simple little questions, most people don't really know, you know, and some of it is trial and error once you get there. But if you have a better idea of what you are probably going to need when you get there, you won't be so shocked when other things come up. That's what we're trying to do.
What do you think are the most important skills and traits when it comes to success with homesteading? Is it really about skills or mindset or some blend of the two?
It really is a blend, to be honest with you. You know, anyone who's interested in this type of a lifestyle, no matter how, you know, all in you decide to go, I think most people have a general appreciation that they're going to be challenged in a physical way. You're going to be, you know, digging gardens and moving this and that. And so they have an idea of that. But most people are quite shocked by the emotional side of it and the resilience that you really need to have to change your entire lifestyle. There's sometimes loneliness involved. If you're really, out there, you don't have neighbors that are right close. It can be very isolating for a lot of people. So I think there needs to be a real balance, right, between whether or not you're ready physically and whether or not you think you have the resilience mentally to be able to just keep going forward. Because there's going to be a lot of days where you question your life choices, right?
Like, yeah.
There's going to be days. And are you really ready to go all in? Or if you're not ready, you know, you read our book and you look at the lists and you do the evaluations and you go, uh-oh, this is not what I thought it was going to be. Maybe I shouldn't jump right in. That to us, even if you decide not to do it, is a win. Okay, because now you can either take those lists and say, this is what I need to do to get ready, or you can find pared down ways where you can take the principles of this homesteading lifestyle, which really is just about self-reliance, you know, and apply them in ways that are more realistic for your lifestyle and your abilities. You know,
yeah, I agree with that. I think another part of that is don't try to do everything.
Right.
It's not binary. I am a homesteader. I'm not a homesteader. And then people get this idea like, well, to be a homesteader, I have to raise my own meat. I have to grow my own food. I have to have solar. Like, you can pick and choose the pieces that fit your life.
Yeah.
And you can look around to the broad economy, and but more the local economy for the things you don't want to do, somebody else doesn't want to, wants to do. We don't eat a lot of bread, but when we do, we prefer to eat like a fermented sourdough. Yeah. And I've had tons of, I'll help you, Jack. I'll give you, it's not that I don't know how to do it. I got enough going on in my life. I don't need to be making bread every week, but turns out we have a neighbor that's a listener to our show. They only live about half a mile that way from where I'm sitting right now. And the wife of the couple does a lot of sourdough, sells it at farmer's markets. They just put it in order. Bring it over, you give them the money. Now I got sourdough, artisan made with, you know, artisan, ancient wheat and all the stuff they say you should be doing if you're, but I ain't going to do it because I'm doing my stuff. I'm taking care of my ducks. I'm taking care of my gardens. I'm running my aquaponic systems and I'm running a full-time business. So, you know, and I'm writing books. So if I'm doing all of that, everything I add put stress on the total system till you get to a point where if I can do this thing, but if I do this thing, I have to take the time from some other thing.
Right.
And so this compulsion, and I see it in people, they want to do all the things.
All of that.
And the only thing worse than wanting to do all the things is what we started with, all the things at once. I guarantee you, you will hate your life if you try to do all the things at once. But if you do them one at a time, you will reach a point where you go, done. And when a new shiny comes up, you'll go, you know what? I'll play with that. See if it, and if it makes sense, maybe I'll swap it.
Right.
We can't do all the things.
The great thing about the homesteading lifestyle is that largely we were all doing it up until 80 years ago. Right.
Yeah.
We were all doing it. And not everybody had chickens in their backyard. Not everybody had goats or cows or whatever, but you go inside your own community. For example, like you said, your neighbor bakes the bread. Right. So you don't have to take that on, but maybe she likes your eggs. So you guys swap eggs out, you know, maybe, for example, we have a mill. So we are able to use the mill services as trade for other things that we need as well. Now, that's not our 100% system. We're going to the store just like everybody else and getting the stuff we need. But we've already started to develop those connections where if I want goat's milk, I go out to this person. If I want, you know, this, that, or the other, I go out to that person. And then they come to us for the things that we have to offer. So you don't have to take it all on yourself. You just have to find the best balance for you. I know that you're in this, you're like myself, you're in this industry of the survival and being prepared, okay? And you know as well as I do that there's a bit of a snobbish hierarchy as far as the definition of off-grid. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's a certain group of people that think you're really not doing it right unless you are on candles and, you know, hunting all your own food and everything.
You got to make the candles with tallow from the deer that you shot, or it's not a real candle.
Like they want to go hardcore, and that is fantastic for them, but that is not for everyone. And it's really not realistic in the modern times for, you know, especially for a larger family to try and take that on and develop that. Not saying you can't do it, but it is a lot, and it's fine for that group. But I don't want people getting caught up in the logistics of, am I a real homesteader if I do this? Am I is this really genuine if I'm not 100% off grid? Or can I still go to the grocery store Of course you can. There's no real rules. It's really just about taking on different, priorities, being more careful with things that you use, being more sustainable in just your attitudes and the way that your routines are. If you want to be off grid like we are, we're 100% solar. We have a 50-inch TV. We've got internet. We've got a microwave. We've got everything that everybody else has. It's just not connected to the main grid.
Yeah.
You know, that's a possibility for almost everybody if they live in the right place. You don't have to have a big farm or anything like that. People are looking desperately for ways to save money right now. The world is crazy. Prices are insane, you know, and any little way that you can, you know, save a little bit of money by using the principles, whether it's canning or starting a little vegetable garden or whatever it is, then great. And our book will tell you whether or not you're ready to go all in. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think the reality is that hits people when they look at moving from an urban to a more rural environment? I personally recommend a lot of people consider doing what I did and find what I call the urban rural fringe, where like where I live, there's nothing I can't do that you can other than maybe climate based because you're in Canada and I'm in Texas. In fact, there may very well be things that I can do without asking anybody permission that you might need permit for. I don't know your government, your province and your nation's stuff.
Right.
I mean, I could, short of cooking meth, I can pretty much do anything I want here without asking anybody. But yet 25 minutes away is Fort Worth, Texas.
Right.
That's kind of a unicorn thing to find that perfect balance though. And so a lot of people to get the kind of land they want, they've got to go further out. And that brings in some economic realities, even if they can work remotely or whatever. Like when you want something, you can't just, like I was just at Nicole's place up in Tennessee, you know, Nashville, you can get anything. Where she's at, it's a good 45 minutes. And so that's, you know, almost 3 hours to go do anything and come back. By the time you're at the store, pick it up, bring it back. It changes everything.
It does. You know, the choosing your land is really one of the most important aspects of entering into this lifestyle. And for just, you know, my own experience, we looked all over the United States. I'm Canadian. My husband is American. So we looked all over the United States from Montana to Tennessee, down in Texas, wherever. We took all of the different aspects into consideration. What type of land was it? What time of seasons do they get? What will we be dealing with summer, winter, fall? What about agriculture, everything else? And then I remember saying to my husband, geez, if we really wanted the pristine place to be, we'd be looking in Canada at this area that I know. So we started looking there and we found a spot. But, you know, choosing your land is an individual process depending on where you are. People in Texas are going to look for very different things than people who are in Maine are going to look for on their land. You know, the best advice that I have is make a list of your must-have things for your land just to get started. You know, I mean, the obvious things, you want something that's not going to be dealing with natural disasters. Is it in a floodplain? Is it very rugged? Is there access to it? Are you going to have to put in, $100,000 worth of driveways and roads just to get you to your land? All of these things have to be considered before you even go shopping around for land. It's a lot. It's a lot. Your land will either make it or break it. Truly.
Let's talk about the physical demands. Another reason I like small design is it focuses work in a given area. And I like the permaculture zone approach because the intensive work in zone one and two are close. And that makes for a lot less wasted energy. And then your broader things can be handled with things like a UTV or a horse or a truck or whatever, if you have that larger property anyway. But I think we even have to look at it not just from like the distance travel, but weight bearing, load bearing, things that as we get older become difficult. I was just gone for a week. My wife had to watch a place alone. And even just in some of my aquatic systems, some of the larger valves can, you know, get stuck and need to be opened and reclosed. And that some of that's even getting hard for her now as we're both getting older. So I think we need to design not just from a standpoint of let's minimize how much labor it takes, but we also need to be like, you can put a lot of labor out when you're 30. and maybe a little less when you're 40. And about for a dude at 45, guys, it's been a while for me, but I'll tell you, your extended warranty runs out and it's not renewable. And so we need to kind of be designing with how do we design a system that over time becomes less labor intensive, or you end up in the classic state of like people actually love their homestead.
Yeah.
But if they can't find like a tenant or somebody, they sell it and they move to a little 3-2 right back in the suburbs because they can't do it anymore.
That's right. You know, when we moved onto the property, I was 51 and my husband was 59. So we are in the later stages of mostly the age groups that are jumping into the homesteading lifestyle. Luckily for us, we both grew up rurally. So we did have a very good appreciation of how much physical work it was going to take. Also, we're both in great shape. Neither one of us have particularly bad knees yet, bad hips yet. Or any physical limitations. That doesn't mean that it's easy. You know, a whole day of work, you know, if you're in your 40s, a whole day of work used to last a lot longer in your 30s than it does in your 50s. We're stopping by noon in some cases going, okay, I'm done. I'm done for the day. I can feel it, you know. So when
I was 40, I was still putting people in the dirt that were 10 years younger than me. That ain't happening no more.
You know, if you're not in the best shape, you're going to get in good shape pretty damn quick, but you have to be ready for it, you know. And like you said, you have to be really intentional about how you plan your homestead, especially if you're hitting your 40s or maybe this is a retirement project for you, whatever it may be. You have to be really intentional with your design. You have to really consider things like how much weight can you handle? You know, how far of a distance can you carry heavy things, buckets of water, things like that. Also, you have to plan for the eventualities. You know, both my husband and I travel quite a bit. So one of us is often here by ourselves. So sometimes for a week or more. So you have to set your system up to be kind of, you know, user friendly, depending on what your challenges are. Because when you're on a homestead 100% by yourself in the middle of February in Northern Ontario, Canada, you better be ready. You better be ready if you're going to be by yourself. So most of the decisions that you're going to be making week to week and month to month should be prioritizing your own comfort, huge prioritization over safety. For example, I was gone this past week and the rule in our house is, or around on our homestead, is you don't use anything that could kill you when you're here by yourself.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm all in on that. Right? You know,
no chainsaws, no, nothing that could injure you and you can't get out of here if you're by yourself. So you have to be very, very thoughtful, very safety conscious. And like you said, you know, we're very lucky. We have a small town about 10 minutes from us that has everything we need. And we have a much larger town about 45 minutes from us. Okay. If it were up to my husband, we would have been 250 miles from everything in the middle of the woods, you know. But that's really, for us, it wasn't realistic. As we're not getting any younger, if we ever needed medical attention or anything like that, you're talking about a whole other, you know, list of problems when you're really, really remote. So people need to be very intentional, whatever their circumstances are, whether it's a family, whether you have young kids, are you going to be near school systems, that kind of stuff. And it needs to be, you know, planned out well in advance.
I love the synergy that comes out of my audience as we're talking about this, because I was literally just about to talk about something I call the grandfather test.
Okay.
Right? Your grandma test, right? And this guy just dropped a comment here, Cameron 67, said, plan your lifestyle like your grandparents are moving into the house, because by the time you're done, you'll be their age. And what I got to say is, when you build a system, you should ask yourself, could my grandma do this? And if you're old, as old as me, maybe your mom. And if you're really young, maybe it's great grandma, but somebody in your life, you know, that can still get around. But if you wouldn't ask them to do it physically, that's okay while you're young. But then that system should be maturing into something where that's no longer the case. There is kind of the bootstrap in the beginning. And we'll carry the water to the house if we have to from the spring house. But there needs to be a plan to move that water through a pipe to the house in a way where it won't freeze, right? And if it breaks, you can fix it, or at least call someone to do it for you, because you are not going to be able to do it forever. And more importantly, you ain't going to want to.
No, you're not, or I mean, just physically be able to, you know, homesteading doesn't mean that you have to lack convenience. You know, when you're developing your systems, you're in charge of how you want it done. So you can customize it how you want. I told my husband after our first month here, I said, I think you need to install one of those grab bars next to the bed so that I can haul my sore ass up every morning. This is killing me. You know, This is killing me. I'm questioning my life choices after 3 weeks, you know, but eventually you get into the flow of it. But like you said, we're not getting any younger. We don't want a house with stairs. We don't want any of our systems to be somewhere where you have to climb up to it or climb down to it or swing across the jungle doing it. We don't want any of that. And also we take into consideration injuries because I guarantee you, I don't care how old you are, you're going to be injured. So can you use your main systems if you have a bit of an injury? Can you lift things? Can you get the feed to the animals that you need? Does anyone know, you know, before they do this lifestyle, how heavy is a bale of hay? You know, and when can you lift 4 or 5 of them in a morning if you're injured? I just went through major surgery. I had my kidney removed, and we had to plan for that for weeks in advance so that the systems that we have were super friendly to having not only one person down, you're off, that through my recovery that I wasn't going to re-injure myself. So there needs to be a lot of really, really thoughtful planning before you get into this, a situation that could end up being really, really difficult for you.
Let's talk a little bit about isolation too, because Help's nice, but you guys are out, but not completely out. And like you said, if it was up to your husband, you'd be another 200 miles out in the woods and have real isolation. But here's what I've noticed. A lot of times, unless you're doing the true like suburban homestead thing, if you just want to do this at kind of that one level up, mid-sized property, like I have 3 acres, when you find a place that you can get a hold of a property like that, You look out on your street, you're probably not in a neighborhood anymore.
Right.
And that alone creates an isolation level, even with kids. And then, you know, where I live, if you have a property like that, it is probably perimeter fenced. That alone creates another level of isolation. Not that nobody don't want to talk to nobody, but, you know, I'm not going through my neighbor's gate and walking up to their door with his, they're like a mastiff rescue. They got 11 mastiffs front. They'll kill me. Right.
Yeah.
If my dogs are in the house, you can walk right up to my door. But it's not it's not like a neighborhood where you would just knock or ring the bell and say, hi, I'm your neighbor. I live 3 houses over. Nice to meet you. And so it takes a little bit more effort
to
build community in that situation.
Yeah. It's not as easy when your neighbor is, you know, 3 miles to the south. You really have to take the initiative. I do understand that there is a sector of people that this type of a lifestyle appeals to them because they're sick of people. You know, they want to just get the hell away from people. And I understand it. Listen, we all have those, you know, those days. But trying to homestead completely independently is really, really going to be a challenge for almost anyone. It really does take a community. Our suggestion basically to most people, start building your community the moment you get there. In our case, we started a Facebook group and just threw it out there, see if there was anyone in our area that might be doing the same thing. Within a couple of weeks, we had over 100 members. You know, who knew? But it provided us with an instant support system, and not just a support system. You have people that you meet within your circle or your community or your neighbors that have all different skill sets than you do. And you can take advantage of those relationships to learn the things that you might need to know. Learn about your area. Learn about the zoning. Learn about the weather that's, you know, challenges that you might have if you're moving somewhere where you haven't lived before. There are multiple endless advantages to building even a loosely knit community for when, because you're going to need help. There will be a point where you're going to need help.
No, they're absolutely.
I mean,
sometimes it's just so you can leave. Like one thing about homesteaders is we end up on some levels, and I think sometimes too much, tying ourselves to our land. When I lived in the suburbs, even doing kind of the suburban homestead thing, if we wanted to go on vacation, I could just make a phone call, board the dogs, or get a dog sitter.
Right.
And go for 2 weeks and come home, and that was it. You know, somebody would come by the house morning, afternoon, and evening, let the dogs out for a little bit so they didn't take a deuce on the floor. And everything, and automate irrigation. And yeah, the grass was high when I got back and whatever, but done it. You know, you start having, I got a flock of about 50 ducks.
Right.
And I've got geese, and I've got aquatic systems that run pumps, and those pumps sometimes have problems.
Yeah.
And then I got the two dogs that are actually trained to watch the property. And so when I go on vacation, it needs a lot more oversight than somebody with a quarter acre in the burbs.
Yeah, you can't. It's not easy to just ask somebody to come and house it. It's not as simple as that, you know.
Yeah, they have lives too, right?
Yeah, for sure. And they need to understand. So it would need to be somebody that either lives on the property and or is a neighbor maybe and already kind of understands your animals and your systems. You know, that being said, I kind of joke with people that homesteading for me was about creating a lifestyle from which I do not need to take a vacation.
No.
You know, a lady likes to get out of the woods every once in a while, you know, get out. And I travel across the province and the country doing workshops and education. So, you know, it's a priority to try and make your systems easy so that you can leave if you need to, you know.
Sometimes I like to go to places like Alaska or the Caribbean.
Right.
Right. That's a long way from here.
It
and
is.
I'm not going to stop doing that just because I have a homestead. So we are honestly doing some things to change some of the systems on the site right now because we had a couple who would always do it. They were happy to do it. We paid them to do it. They came here, and our place is kind of like a vacation for them when they were here.
Right.
But they also just moved to Tennessee. That's a little bit different than living two hours away. Like, They were able to come basically live here for a week and a half while we were gone. That's not a thing anymore. So I've got to find other ways to do that now.
Yeah. You know, automating your systems can go a long way. If you do have a circumstance or you just want to travel, you know, a bit, automating your systems as best as possible will go a long way to keeping things running. Like you said, your grass might be a little bit longer, but you know, everything made it through the time. Again, having that one person at the very least that you can rely on to, you know, make sure things run smoothly. I mean, that's crucial, and not everybody has that. And that's the advantage of reaching out to your community. You know, another homesteader is going to understand your property a lot better than somebody, you know, from the city who's coming in. It's not like just watering your plants. You know, there's a lot more to it. But in our case, trying to automate it, and unfortunately, a lot of times we end up traveling separately.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things I think we've lost is kind of the multi-generational thing. Like I think back to when I was a kid. You know, we didn't live like multi-generationally on the homestead, but like my grandparents' place was only. I'll put it this way: I could ride my bike from my house to my grandparents' place. It was Gen X and it's down a highway. So we're still talking miles, not hundreds of yards. But for my dad with a truck, it was a joke to be able to ask to go over there. He'd just go over and take care of stuff. And we all kind of worked together. And then, you know, I had an uncle that lived across the street from them. So as they aged out, there was plenty of support. And then the more elder people in the family, maybe they didn't do the things anymore, but they were the ones that knew how to do all the things and could tell a 13-year-old, hey, here's how to prune the suckers off a tomato plant. And the old man ain't doing it no more, and the kid's out there doing it. Now I'm the old man teaching my grandson how to do it. But we don't have that tight multi-generational thing anymore.
Yeah.
And so we have to think more about, how am I going to do it, or how am I going to keep it running, or how am I going to, like, maybe I am going to do more things with my homestead when I'm 40, and maybe I'm going to transition to just supporting me in my retirement. We don't really have that kind of, like, grandpa knows all the things, dad does all the things, and junior's learning all the things. We don't really have that anymore, sadly.
We're losing the knowledge. You know, the knowledge has always been there, but over generations of, you know, that knowledge has been replaced by technology and convenience, you know. So what have you noticed at all? I'll ask you that there's a growing trend for family compounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So that's and it was varying success, varying degrees of success. A lot of them are great ideas that never happen. A lot of them kind of sort of work, and some are like they try to make a go of it, and it turns into a knife.
Well, you can't choose your family, right? You have to have the right family to kind of do this. But, you know, there's other, it doesn't necessarily have to be family. Sometimes it's just two or three friends or whatever it is that, you know, go together. That in itself is probably the easiest way to get started. If you can rely on the people that you're doing it with, you're relying on everyone's group skills. You know, it's a conglomeration of everybody's experience. But again, you must have a solid plan. You can't go into it arguing with five different families about how you want to set things up. But yeah, the community and or family and or a generational type of a situation is always going to be easier than trying to manage it on your own, truly.
What are your thoughts on people that are like, I'm going to move out and leave my job in corporate America? I did it, but I did it in my own way, creating my own little empire here, kind of a media empire. Not everybody can do that. Certainly not everybody will do that. I think there's kind of multiple approaches. One is a lot of times high earners can still earn high dollar amounts by working remote, but sometimes you can't.
Sure.
And so at some point you got to decide, I'm either going to go way out and do all the things and somehow monetize it, or maybe I've built enough wealth to be able to have a small income draw off of it and do enough, or you end up having to make a decision to be more kind of that urban rural fringe. Like, how does that all work for you?
You know, you have to have a pretty good bankroll to be able to not have some sort of a side business or a part-time job, full-time job. One person is working, one person isn't, whatever your situation is. It takes and you know, you've been developing yours, you know, for years. It takes quite a bit of capital to set up these systems. If you are looking for a quick escape from the nightmare of your current career, whatever that may be, this is not the route for you. This is not the route for you. It is not a quick fix. It is not a quick transition. And your best way to be successful is transition very slowly. For folks who are, you know, gung-ho, but they really don't know much about homesteading, my recommendation to them is go camping for a week with nothing but your sleeping bag, you know. Listen, if you can do that and go through all the problem solving that you will need to keep yourself alive for a week, you might have a chance on a homestead. Otherwise, it might eat you alive. It might eat you alive. If you're for the ladies, it might look idyllic with your garden and you're chopping your vegetables and you're baking your bread and you're, you know, that's all great. But forget about acrylic nails. That's done. Makeup done, right? Cut your hair off or put it up in a bun, because this is the reality of living on a homestead. It is not glamorous. It is mostly not pretty, you know, and you will be probably needing to change habits. You know, you're not going to be able to at first shower daily unless you already have a house on site. It's not going to happen. You're going to make best friends with things like duct tape and wet wipes. It's not, you know, and if that's just not who you are, this might not be a all in situation for you.
No, don't do it that way. Like, I lived on a trail for 3 months hiking a section hike on the Appalachian Trail from Pennsylvania to New Hampshire.
Oh, that's awesome.
Right. If I were to go back to being 30 years old again, I can live like it doesn't even bother.
Yeah.
When I was 30 years old, married to my wife, though, that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
And today I look at it at my age. If you said, hey, you want to start over? Well, maybe it depends where I would be going. Well, you buy this piece of raw land and go live on it in a tent or some shit. I ain't doing that. Right.
No.
I'm either putting a house in or I'm buying. I would even buy a place with like a mobile home on it that's livable. But, you know, full well, after I'm done building, it's going to get a gas can and a match.
Oh, yeah.
But I am not living without running water. I'm not going to start out without electricity. That's my tolerance now. And that's directly related to the fact that if I wanted to do it somewhere else, I don't have to. So you have to look at what are your resources and how much are you willing to give to get what you want, and be clear about it. And don't think for 1 minute, like when you're like, you've never had to use an outhouse in your life and like, well, it won't be that bad getting up and going to the outhouse. Well, in May, it probably won't in the middle of the night. Maybe you wish you didn't have to, but you'll go to when it's freaking January.
Yeah.
Right. And you have to put on all the clothes just to go take a dump. And
yep.
You got to do it because you got to do it.
Yep.
You ain't going to like it. And you might say, well, it wouldn't be that bad to have to carry water in the house. A couple months of it, you ain't going to feel that way. So yes. If you have to sacrifice, by all means, develop a plan to do so, but
that's
develop
right.
A plan to not have to keep doing it.
That's right. You should be working towards systems, obviously. A lot of people who do jump in, they buy raw land and there's nothing there. So they have to come up with a solution for at least temporary shelter. You know, a lot of people do the trailer, they do a yurt, they do, you know, whatever it is that works for them. And like you said, you know, it's great for a little while.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whether it's in an exhaustion and close quarters, you know, can get on your nerves depending on your relationship. If you have kids, it gets really, you know, close. Here's the problem. You might think that that is livable for a couple weeks, couple months while you build your home, your residence, whatever it may be. I guarantee you that it's going to be longer than a couple months. Right. So everything that you think you're going to be able to get done in a couple months, triple it. So can you live in a trailer for a year? You know, are you willing? What sacrifices are you willing or are you prepared for to get your foot in the door on your property so that your systems are starting to go? And after, you know, next year, we're going to have a this, that or the other and you're moving towards it. But like you said, you're very honest. I don't want to live like this. You know, I want to have this, this and this set up before.
And again, I would have done it 20 years ago. I don't have to now and I'm older now. So I ain't doing it no more.
Right. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get people to do a really honest self-assessment, you know, and say, OK, well, I really don't want that. I really do want that. I'm not sure if I could do this. I'm not sure, whatever it may be, you know, so that they are a little more prepared, have a little bit more resilience when the tough times come because they were kind of waiting on it. You know,
We
want people to succeed. We've had people take a look at my book and say, it kind of sounds like you're discouraging people from doing this lifestyle. And I'm really not. I'm discouraging you from jumping in without looking. We want you to be more self-reliant. We want people to feel that freedom of, you know, being in charge of their own existence. Definitely. But what we see is a lot of people are failing because they're not properly prepared. And instead of showing you, you know, my garden and this, that, and how perfect everything may or may not be, I'd rather say to you, listen, this is a great way to live, but if you're not ready for it, it's going to kick your ass. And you're going to want to quit, you know, and you've wasted time, money, effort. You know, we want to give people the information that they need to be able to build a solid foundation that after 3 to 5 years, they are loving their life and they've got something that's real and workable.
Yeah. Yeah, I would completely agree that it's with anything. And it's not just homesteading. We talk about dietary changes. And sometimes when you do that, there's some uncomfortable transitional period. If you don't prepare the person who's about to embark on a journey that will have adversity for the adversity, when they hit the adversity, they tend to quit because they don't just think, oh, this sucks. It's my fault that this has happened.
Right.
It works for everybody else, but it's not working for me. So since they don't see the adversity for others, they think, well, I just am not good at this. I'm not cut out for this. And they don't work through it. And I think
they look at their bucket of potatoes that's in a messy garden and it's just random. And then they see online somebody with their beautiful 20 by 20 fenced in and architectured garden and they feel like a failure.
Yeah.
You know, and that does not help keep you motivated to work towards your dream. My advice to people is, as far as social media is concerned, is learn the information that you need to learn. I would go towards, and not just because I'm an author, but because this is what we did. We built a physical library, you know, on every subject of homesteading that you could possibly imagine. And we learned from the experts, you know, and While we did watch endless YouTube videos and endless, you know, this, that, and the other, and we listen to the podcasts and we do all the stuff to do the research, until you're, you know, feet on the ground, boots on the ground, you better have a plan.
Yeah.
You better have a plan, you know.
Because, and also be willing to quit, not the whole thing, but a thing. Like, so if you've put four or five systems in place and three of the four or four of the five work wonderfully for you, and right, one you just freaking hate, if you can optimize it to where you don't hate it, you, again, I'm back to the beginning, we don't all have to do all the things. Or exactly, you might find out that, like, I have an aviary that it's no longer an aviary. It's just a big cage because there's nothing in it. And I did it because I wanted to do the natural method of raising quail. So I had tons of quail running around in this 50-foot-long aviary. People said you can't do it. They'll fly and break their necks. They're full of crap. It's a bird that knows how to fly. It's sure, fine. Sure. It worked beautifully. It wasn't even hard. But my wife just got to this point where she wouldn't eat it.
Right.
I'm not doing that for one person.
For sure.
I wasn't shamed in the Homesteaders Hall of Fame or something. They didn't take away my man card because I ate all the quail we had and said, okay, I'm not doing it no more. It's right, okay to change. Yeah. Or, again, sometimes you might decide I want to add something. I really suggest you test it small first. And if it seems like it's going to work for you and you say, I'd rather do A than B, then kill B. It's okay.
For sure. You know, we have a couple that's just down the road from us that basically has a homestead that's at around the same development time as ours is. And they are nothing alike. We have our setup. We have our way of doing things. They have their setup and their way of doing things, because everybody has different backgrounds. Everybody comes in with different skill sets and everybody comes in with different philosophies. Okay. Some people don't want to do the chickens other than for eggs because they don't have the heart to process a chicken, and or any other animals that they have. That's where your community comes in. In our community, for example, we have a woman who loves to raise her chickens and she loves to eat chicken, but she doesn't want to process the chickens, right? So for the cost of a couple of those birds, another homesteader who is comfortable with the, you know, culling will come in and do the culling for her so that she doesn't have to see it or, you know, whatever. And again, you can't judge. That's her philosophy. She wants to be more sustainable, but she doesn't want to take the life herself. Well, we can work around that. You know, it doesn't make her any less of a homesteader, any less of a, you know, badass chick. You know,
she works
the way that she wants to work her system. She doesn't hunt. We do. You know, she does a ton of canning. We do mostly preservation and we eat as we go. You know, and it's just, it's different. You can't get stuck in that idyllic type of a thing that you're seeing online, because the innards, the way that everything works, has to be customized to what you need, you know. And before you spend $25,000, you know, $250,000, you know, dollars on this dream that you're not really sure if it's even for you, spend $25 and start building a library. You know, not only is it not online, so that if you have questionable internet, you can get at it. It's right in front of you. You know, you're talking about information that, if it's been put into a book, oftentimes you're talking about experts, people who are living it themselves. You know, so you're drawing on a lot of different personal experiences, which is going to be a lot more valuable for you.
All right. I want to back up for just a second, because there was something you said, and then I kind of, when you were talking, I forgot about it. It took me a second to remember I was going to bring it up. You were talking about not planning on things happening in the timeline that you expect them to. Like, when you are, like, you buy an RV, maybe at least bring in some power and at least you can live in it. But living in an RV gets old fast, especially, you know, for the small secondhand one, if it's a get by thing. Yeah. And when you're building that house, don't expect it to be done. Don't expect the well to get done on time. Don't expect the house, the sign off by the bureaucrat, all of that. And I'm going to put it this way. I've been doing this show for 18 years. I've been doing this. I have interviewed well over 1,000 people. I've done over almost 4,000 episodes of this show. So it's easily 1,000 interviews. Out of those, probably 100 at least are people that moved to raw land and did it. They actually built a place. The yeah. total number of people who I asked this question to and answered, yep, no problem. When you set this up and planned out the timeline to build your place, did it go as you had planned? Zero. Not one. I've never even heard of somebody tell me about someone. And the only way that's going to happen is like my old business partner, Neil, is worth about $100 million. If he wanted to do this, maybe, he'd make a phone call, talk to an architect and say, tell me when I can move in. Right. And unless that's you, if you're starting with raw land, you're not going to make a deadline, let alone the deadline. And you need to plan for that.
You do, you know, and that's a lot about attitude. You know, we talked about patience earlier. I have to be patient and resilient. But, you know, there's a lot to be said about keeping a positive attitude because you are undoubtedly going to have rough days, rough weeks, you know, where your entire plan, you know, last year we were supposed to add an addition onto our small cabin and we had a tornado come through that took out 100 or more trees that it took us months to clean up. So that all had to be put on hold. And, you know, you're so excited, you're doing this, you've got this plan, and then it's just wiped out instantly, you know. And or we've got a lot of flooding up here right now. We had 2 feet of snow that all melted in less than a week. So there's a ton of flooding. People aren't going to be able to get to their gardens. They're not going to be able to do. So you have to be able to be on the fly all the time, you know.
Yeah,
definitely people need to be ready with the right attitude. You can cry all you want and stomp your feet and throw your shovel and do whatever it is that you're going to do, but it doesn't make the projects get done any faster. You know, you have to be able to just say, you know, well, this is part of the process. For example, we built our home with our mill from the wood on our own land. This was a dream that we both had to build it ourselves. Okay, great. But how many times during that year and a half of building it did I just want to call up a mobile home company and say, can you just drop something off? Because I am sick of this crap. Okay. Every other day, maybe, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, the satisfaction at the end of the day, when you see how much, whatever your project is that you're building for your own interest on your own land that no one can take away from you, there is something deeply, powerfully satisfying about that. And I think that is the biggest part that draws people into it. They want to feel like they have more control over their own lives, over their own, you know, destiny. And, but yeah, you need to have a good attitude. You can't be, you know, whinging and whining all the time and everything else. No one's coming to save you on the homestead.
Yeah.
No one's coming to save you.
You kind of alluded to this earlier, but are there some warning signs that maybe someone's pursuing this for the wrong reasons? I think people have midlife crises. Mine is a beautiful blue Challenger that I named Val after our icon Val of our show. That was a pretty benign midlife crisis. I bought it during COVID and paid, you know, $14,000 under dealer cost on it. So I'm feeling pretty good about it. But sometimes I think people make these major changes in their life because they're unhappy with their life, but they haven't. It's the fryer out of the pan into the fryer thing. They haven't really looked at where they're going. They're just going away. And I think that can lead to a lot of bad mistakes.
You know, I 100% agree with you. And like we said earlier, you know, this is not a quick exit ramp out of the problems that you're having in your current life, whatever that might look like. A lot of people misunderstand that homesteading is a slower, easier life. It can be once everything is in place, but your first couple years are going to be pretty chaotic, you know, and it's not going to be any less expensive. Most homesteads are lucky to be even remotely self-sustainable after 3 to 4 years, you know. It takes time. So if you're looking for an emotional exit out of whatever your circumstances right now, this is not the right move for you. You need to step back and maybe take some time. This is a massive shift for most people. If you have a rural background, you grew up in a rural background, or, you know, maybe your grandparents had a farm, or you have some level of experience in this type of a lifestyle, you're better off than if you're coming straight from an urban setting, you know, and trying to switch over to the entire thing. But it is a very dramatic switch. It's dramatic emotionally. It's dramatic physically. It's dramatic financially. And it needs to be given the proper consideration before you jump in, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I always say, what can you do with what you have? Right? Most people that live, I mean, if you have an apartment, I get that, you know, you can only do so much with a patio, especially if it's not oriented towards south or something like that.
Right.
But if you have a suburban home, you can probably put in a small garden. Why don't you start there?
Absolutely.
Why don't you just learn some food preservation techniques, and you can go to the farmer's market and buy really high quality food and learn some food preservation techniques.
And, absolutely. And
start exploring, doing versus just looking, so that you get a feel like, what do I actually enjoy doing? What's too much work? If you're like, you know, running 2 4x8 beds is all I got in me, well, then you don't need 20 of them.
That's right.
And a lot of people would be shocked what a small garden will do, especially if you're at like an age like I'm at and you're saying you're at, and I got kids, but they're in their 30s. I got grandkids. I got one that's 3 years away from being an adult legally, 2 and a half actually, right? And so it's just me and my wife and 2 dogs in the house.
Yeah.
What my garden does for us is beyond what we can use.
Ours too.
We couldn't use any more if we wanted to. I can't really explain the way it lays out because it's it's the equivalent of what, 4 by 8s and 4 4x4s.
Is right. What it did ends up being.
There's more food out of there than we know what to flip and do with, right? Like we literally give a lot away. When we do our workshop in November, people are like, can I take this? I don't care. By then I'm like, take whatever you want. It's fixing to freeze.
Yeah.
Right. And I've done dehydrated, canned or froze, whatever the hell I'm going to do for the year. I'm done. So like, don't think you have to go to the extreme to benefit from learning how to use. Like where I grew up, we had about a 1/2 acre garden.
Right.
I gave away 80% of what we grew. And I'm talking when I was a kid, my grandma would pack up bags. And I'd be going up and down the road to all the older people in the community. They couldn't do it for themselves anymore because their kids had left, right?
That's so funny. My husband did the same thing.
You know,
when he was a kid, he used to drag his wagon out. They had a huge garden in the back, and all the excess, he would go sell it to the older neighbors because they couldn't get out to the market.
He's like, I made all the pickles and the chow chow, and I'm done. And she just start piling stuff in the old sack, the brown grocery sacks like you used to get for the stupid plastic things that end up in the trees. And she'd just start writing family names on them. And I'd just be trucking my little ass up and down the road until everything was handed out.
Yeah.
And people like, why didn't they sell them? First of all, you wouldn't have done it there. This is a poor place. But two, the value of the social capital my grandparents had because of that was expensive for giving away some groceries that the chickens would have ate if you didn't do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's you know, it's a lot about goodwill. And I think that a good attitude to have is really embracing your community. Nobody gets out of this lifestyle on their own, you know, and being generous is one way, not only in, you know, giving away excess, but always being available to help your neighbors. Not only will you learn, you know, you're also kind of fostering goodwill. So that when it's your turn someday, when you need a hand, they're kind of ready to come and help you. But yeah, definitely. It's, you know, I didn't know. I thought that when we got here that gardening was going to be my least favorite thing to do. I kind of assumed I'd always had a black thumb, and I thought that would kind of be my hubby's area, and that the garden for me was going to be more like just physical labor that would eventually produce something.
Yeah.
I am obsessed. I cannot get enough of the garden. I am out there every morning. I'm making up things to do so that I don't have to leave the garden, you know. And I had no concept of that until I was physically doing it and realized how much I love it. There's also stuff like I love to chop wood. I love to chop wood. But there's other stuff. I don't like it so much. And I thought it would be not that big of a deal. So once you're doing it, you will learn what type of a setup you want. And like you said, you don't have to do it all. Do the things that speak to you, where you lose time, you know, when you're doing them. Everybody can design their own life as long as they're, you know, prepared for setting the right expectations.
for listeners that are interested in self-reliance, what are a few ways they could start building homesteading skills without immediately buying land or making a major change?
Absolutely. You know, you can start anywhere. And, you know, even you said in an apartment, if you have a small balcony, well, you've seen them. I mean, you have indoor towers now that are hydroponic. If you wanted to do your own vegetables all year, you could start there. There's so much to learn just about growing your own food, you know, and you'll be a good, get a better idea of what you actually will use if you do it on a small scale. Again, my recommendation, not just because I'm an author, but go to the library, go to the bookstore, buy the books that you think are going to align with what your plan is going to look like. You know, that will teach you incredible amounts of skill and reference. You know, you can go back to these books for references over and over and over again. When you have a problem with your animal, you go to your chicken book and you find out what that problem is. You know, it'll give you good guidance. But anyone can start anywhere. Just changing your attitude about living a more sustainable and purposeful and intentional life is the best place to start.
Cool. And, you know, you've got this book. You want to tell people about it. It's appropriately titled Homesteading. Is it the lifestyle for you? Everything you need to know before you buy land.
Absolutely. You know, like I said, we had built our library up and we had just spoken to a friend of ours that are a young couple and they were giving up. They were selling their homestead. And on our way home, we were speaking about it. And I said, geez, you know, for all the research they did, I wish somebody would write a book telling you what you need to know before you jump on and buy your land. And my husband very cheekily said, well, you are a writer. So, and I'm like, yes, I am. Huh. Okay. So that's where that started. And we started going through all of the things that we wish that we had known, even with all the research that we did, that nobody told us. You know, I would have loved it if somebody told me that, you know, you might not have running water for 6 months. You might be using an outhouse. You might be injured in your first 3 weeks and be thrown off the, you know, your course right off the bat. In our case, when we got on our land, it rained for 3 solid weeks. We couldn't do anything.
You know, I ain't got no water, but I have plenty of mud.
Right? I was just mud. It was just mud, you know.
Yeah. So
in our case, it was about filling the gap in the informational cycle for this type of a lifestyle. It's not pretty. It's not always pretty, right?
Yeah.
Is it satisfying? Yes. But is it also frustrating? Absolutely. And we want, like I said, we want people to really be successful. If you want to be more independent, I am all here for you. I am in. The book will help you take a look at where you are right now in a really serious way and give you the guidance of all the different aspects that you should be considering and making your own lists and buying your own books and filling in your own knowledge gaps before you go and buy your land so that when you're ready to step foot on that baby, you are excited, you're knowledgeable, and you're ready to build something really fantastic.
All right. Tell people where they can learn more about you and the work that you're doing and all of the good stuff.
Sure. Well, I mean, obviously you can get the book on Amazon, but it's also available in most bookstores across both Canada and the U.S. I also just have started recently doing workshops that are based on the book, live workshops, talking to people about how to get into the homesteading lifestyle without making really, really expensive, you know, or detrimental mistakes. I keep that itinerary on our Facebook page, which is under Riddle Ridge Homestead. And they can keep up to date there with us and see what's coming up, where we're traveling. I do a lecture series with our McGill University here in Canada, and I travel across Canada educating people about how they can get into this lifestyle and have a chance.
Very, very cool. And I've got links to everything awesome. In the audio version of the show notes. So if you're watching us on video live, we're not done yet. It won't be there if you click the link right now, but about 30 minutes after we sign off, which is going to be very, very soon, if you click that link, you can get on over to the blog post that goes with this. That'll be the audio only version. That's what sends everything out to, you know, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Spotify, and all that. And in those show notes down at the bottom, there'll be links for all the resources for today, which will include all of Allie's links where you can get her book, her website, all her social media and everything like that. So if you're driving down the road listening like 90% of y'all do on the audio side, which is, you know, about 50x the video side, and you're like, I want to find this stuff, as always, just go to the site. And if you're listening to it in the future, because this is kind of a evergreen episode here, just look up the episode. Just go to the search box and stick in 3837. That's today's episode, and you'll find it real quick, and you can get all those resources. Allie, thank you for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm such a fan of the show, and it's wonderful to be able to get a little bit more extended reach out there for people who need the information. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and have a great day.
Thanks.
All right, folks, real quick before we wrap up, I want to remind you about a couple things. First and foremost, we were talking kind of low-tech homesteading, you know, off-grid stuff today. But, you know, here we're really all about lifestyle design, and that's everything from the primitive to the cutting edge and everything in between. And we teach a lot about building businesses here because it's one of the most self-reliant things a person can do is to have their own business and cut the tether to corporate America. Well, we have the course, the AI course we talked about yesterday, Become Dangerous with ChatGPT. That course is for solopreneurs, small business people. That's what it's really designed for. Or maybe a marketing person developing the marketing and operations for a somewhat larger mid-sized company. It would fit as well in your profession. But it is not for the person who just wants to learn to use AI. It is designed as a business consultative course to develop your marketing, scale your business, et cetera. It's basically my method that I used to use 25 years ago consulting with major brands, and you're able to turn AI into what I used to do and charge an awful lot of money for that small businesses usually can't afford. This will be the fourth time we have offered that course. The first three times it sold out really, really fast, and people were actually mad at me that they couldn't get in. I'm warning you in advance. It goes on sale Monday. May the 4th be with you. You can't forget it. Right now, all you got to do is go to Jack's Laws, fill out a form. You'll get some emails reminding you it's coming. You get an email the day it launches, 15 minutes before it happens. You got a countdown when you click on the link. When it goes to zero, it's a race. It will be just like before. I'm not making it up, right? It sells out. We've had it sell out in less than a minute. I know that's crazy, but it happened. So we're trying to make it a little more organized this year. It's a sign-up queue, like buying tickets for a rock concert. And so we're trying to make it a little more organized, a little safer flow. But if you do not register, you're not going to get in. I'll just put it that way. And then the other thing is you can always help support us by doing your online shopping, starting with tspaz.com. If you go there, you find all the products that I've reviewed over the years. And you can find anything you want to buy there. And even if you're buying something that we haven't reviewed, you can still help us out just by starting your shopping there. Today's item of the day is the Olight Arcfield EDC flashlight. This is my EDC flashlight of choice. But what I think is actually more interesting is I have two really good friends. I mean, we go places and go fishing together and stuff like that, take long weekends and hang out. Independently, somehow, we all ended up with the same dadgone light. That tells you something about when you got three guys that like nitpick everything for features and quality, and they all end up with the same thing. That's pretty interesting. What I love about this light, first of all, it carries beautifully. It's flat. It's not round. And very, very bright. It has three functions. Light, like a laser pointer, green laser pointer, which I use a lot when I have like a handyman walking through and I'm trying to explain what I want done with gutters or something. That's really useful. And a UV light, you hunters know one of the things you can use that for. It's kind of cool to look at a lot of things under UV light, including certain funguses and stuff like that. It's a really unique way of view the world. And it is just a really great, tool overall. Anyway, you've got all that going for it. And it is on sale right now for like 20% off. This thing doesn't go on sale that often. One worry about it. I've been to several places. Like we went out to Vegas and we went and saw the Eagles at the Dome and had a guy lecture me for 5 minutes about it was okay to bring in my vape pen, but I wasn't allowed to use it. And no matter how many times I tried to explain to him, it's a flashlight, fool. He wouldn't get it. It does look a little unique and different, but it's a badass flashlight. get it while you can. It's the same one I carry. If you know David, my bud David, and you know my bud JR, we all carry the same light for a reason. With that, I'm going to wrap up. Thanks for tuning in today. Tomorrow will be an expert panel Q&A show for the week, and that means no live stream. The way I do that show, it's just not doable to do as a live stream, but you know, we had a week off from it last week. We'll be back tomorrow. With that, take care, guys. I will catch you tomorrow with that show.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.